micro-podcasts from Films from the Future. On December the 29th, 1959, the physicist Richard Feynman gave a talk at the annual meeting of the American Physical Society, which was held that year at the California Institute of Technology. In his opening comments, Feynman noted, "I would like to describe a field in which little has been done, but in which an enormous amount can be done in principle. This field is not quite the same as others, in that it will not tell as much of the fundamental physics, in the sense of what are the strange particles, but it's more like solid-state physics, in the sense that it might tell as much of great interest about the strange phenomena that occur in complex situations. Furthermore, a point that is most important is that it would have an enormous number of technical applications. What I want to talk about is the problem of manipulating and controlling things on a small scale." Feynman was intrigued with what could be achieved if we could only manipulate matter at the scale of individual atoms and molecules. At the time, he was convinced that scientists and engineers had barely scratched the surface of what was possible here, so much so that he offered a $1,000 prize for the first person to work out how to write a page of a book in type so minuscule it was at a 1 to 25,000 scale. Feynman's talk didn't garner that much attention at first, but over the following decades, it was increasingly seen as a milestone in thinking about what could be achieved if we extended our engineering mastery to the nanometer scale of atoms and molecules. In 1986, Eric Drexler took this up in his book Engines of Creation and popularized the term nanotechnology. Yet it wasn't until the 1990s, when the US government became involved, that the emerging field of nanotechnology hit the big time. What intrigued Feynman, Drexler, and the scientists that followed them was the potential of engineering with the finest building blocks available, the atoms and molecules that everything's made of, or the base code of physical materials in the language of Chapter 9. As well as the finesse achievable with atomic scale engineering, scientists were becoming increasingly excited by some of the more unusual properties that matter exhibits at the nanoscale, including changes in conductivity and magnetism, and a whole range of unusual optical behaviors. What they saw was an exciting new set of ways they could play with the code of atoms to make new materials and products. In the 1980s, this emerging vision was very much in line with Drexler's ideas, but in the 1990s there was an abrupt change in direction and expectations, and it occurred at about the time the US federal government made the decision to invest heavily in nanotechnology. In the 1990s, biomedical science in the US was undergoing something of a renaissance, and federal funding was flowing freely into the US's premier biomedical research agency, the National Institutes of Health. This influx of research funding was so prominent that scientists at the National Science Foundation, NIH's sister agency, worried that their agency was in danger of becoming marginalized. What they needed was a big idea, one big enough to sell to Congress and the President as being worthy of a massive injection of research dollars. Building on the thinking of Feynman, Drexler, and others, the NSF began to develop the concept of nanotechnology as something they could sell to policymakers. It was a smart move, and one that was made all the smarter by the decision to conceive of this as a cross-agency initiative. Smarter still was the idea to pitch nanotechnology as a truly interdisciplinary endeavor that wove together emerging advances in physics, chemistry, and biology, and that had something for everyone in it. What emerged was a technological platform that large numbers of researchers could align their work with in some way, that had a futuristic feel, and that was backed by scientific and business heavyweights. At the heart of this platform was the promise that by shaping the world atom by atom, we could redefine our future and usher in the next industrial revolution. This particular framing of nanotechnology caught on, buoyed up by claims that the future of US jobs and economic prosperity depended on investing in it. In 2000, President Clinton formed the US National Nanotechnology Initiative, a cross-agency initiative that continues to oversee billions of dollars of federal research and development investment in nanotechnology. 18 years later, the NNI is still going strong. As an initiative, it's supported some incredible advances in nanoscale science and engineering, and it has led the growth of nanotechnology the world over. Yet, despite the NNI's success, it has not delivered on what Eric Drexler and a number of others originally had in mind. Early on, there was a sharp and bitter split between Drexler and those who became proponents of mainstream nanotechnology, as Drexler's vision of atomically precise manufacturing was replaced by more mundane visions of nanoscale material science. With hindsight, this isn't too surprising. Drexler's ideas were bold and revolutionary, and definitely not broadly inclusive of existing research and development. In contrast, because mainstream technology became a convenient way to repackage existing trends in science and engineering, it was accessible to a wide range of researchers. Regardless of whether you were a material scientist, a colloid chemist, an electron microscopist, a molecular biologist, or even a toxicologist, you could, with a little effort, rebrand yourself as a nanotechnologist. Yet despite the excitement and the hype, and some rather transcendence-like speculation, what has come to be known as nanotechnology actually has its roots in early 20th century breakthroughs. For more, please check out Films from the Future, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere else good books are sold.